All right, 5 p.m. Wednesday time for American Hit Radio. WHPC 90.3 FM Garden City. Glad to be here. I'm Tom Ryan. With me, of course, my lovely wife and co-host, and now my engineer as well, Heidi Morales Ryan.
Figuring it out over here. Don't forget to tighten up the bolts on your microphone.
Oh, yeah. This happens to me every now and then. They do collapse in the middle of me speaking from time to time. But we're good. We're good. Before we get started, I would like to first take a minute out to thank all of the incredible listeners, friends of our show, and people who called in last week to help us with our fundraiser to contribute some of your own hard-earned money to help us stay on the air. It was a really, really successful event for us, and I promised that we would only do it for that 1 week, and that's true. We are done. So I do not have to do it today, but I would just like to once again thank everybody so much for what you did do to help us. And just to quickly mention that if you didn't hear us last week and you're interested in contributing to the station, please do call 516-572-7438 and let them know that you'd like to make a donation during our program. And that would be wonderful if you could. But that's it. I'm not going there anymore because I made a promise. I'm going to keep
it. Stop doing that.
Let's talk about what we're going to do. Wednesdays, of course, we've been discussing albums back and forth. We've been on a bit of a run with top 40 albums, covering trying to catch up to where we left off with the alternative top 40 stuff, which we brought, I think we got up to just about the early part of 1968. The album that we're covering now is an album from... excuse me, released in December of 1967.
Do you like that I put it on the stand for you?
Oh, it's very...
It's like now
very,
playing.
Yeah, oh yeah. It is in our list. This would be number 52 in our chronological list of top 40 albums, our favorite top 40 albums. As I said, released in December 1967. It's called Axis, Bold as Love by the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Now, in I guess by most standards, this album was sort of a rush job, made quickly because the band had a contract that they were going to release two albums in the year 1967. Their first album came out in May, so they had to get this thing done and complete by December. The terms of the deal were ultimately ironic because the first album was sort of a slow starter as far as sales go. People didn't really know Jimi Hendrix right away. It was really only until Monterey and beyond that he began to catch on. So that album was like, you know, picking up in sales. It was getting better and better and better. So the record company basically realized that they needed to hold back on releasing this album for fear that it would cannibalize sales on the band's awesome debut record. So due to the hurry-up-and-wait syndrome that caused it, the album Axis, Bold as Love probably isn't as good as it could have been, which only makes it really that much more impressive. Because the album has this feel of like spontaneous creation, which, you know, even with like the silly asides every now and then, the contributions from the other band members, which are nowhere near up to what Jimmy's songwriting is about. But these things all morph into moments of pure genius. There's also a story about the album's creation was made even more difficult because Jimi Hendrix had the master tapes of the final mix for side one in his hands. And you hear the story all the time. He left it in the cab. And he never got it back. So
it
forced the band to have to basically go back in and remix the entire side again. And this time they had to do it quickly. And Jimmy said it was never quite the same. He basically never could get back what he wanted to. So basically he was unhappy with the second version of the album. But it is what it is because it had to come out. So they reconvene in the studio with a rough mix for the new version, and all of these problems surrounding the album's creation have faded away with age, really, especially, you know, since the Experience in their existence only released three albums before Jimi Hendrix passed away. So It may be an imperfect record, but it's an imperfect record that actually sounds better the older it gets, if you ask me. So let's kick it off. Let's play a couple of tracks back to back. We sort of have to do that with this because the first track is one of those kind of silly experimental numbers that Jimmy was working on, like a bunch of studio trickery. And we'll play that track. It's called EXP, right into Up From The Skies.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to radio station EXP. Tonight we are featuring an interview with a very peculiar-looking gentleman who goes by the name of Mr. Paul Caruso on the dodgy subject of are there or are there not flying saucers, or UFOs. Please, Mr. Caruso, could you give us your regarded opinion on this nonsense about spaceships and even space people?
Thank you. As you all know, you just can't believe everything you see and hear, can you? Now, if you will excuse me, I must be on my way.
But, I don't believe it.
Bye. They have them back-to-back, EXP into Up From The Skies. Now, these two tracks, is that thing still running, by the way? You might have to take that back. Oh, good. Okay, I see what's happening here. it already starts off like with a looser feel, very looser than anything that was on the first album. You know, basically, Are You Experienced? Even though that album had like some crazy jams, that they seemed like they were very well thought out jams. Here, he kicks it off with something which is a bit looser, jazzier, no doubt. The album went to number 5 on the charts when it was released in Great Britain. In America, although actually here it was held back for a couple months. It was actually released in February of 1968 here in America, although it was getting airplay because as an import, people were interested in Hendrix at this point in time. So here in America, the album eventually went all the way up to number 3 in the United States.
Wow.
So Hendrix was, once he caught on, he was basically, you know, now he's got like 2 albums on the charts at the same time, both Are You Experienced and this album, his second release. Sophomore effort, you could say, with the experience. Next track up is called Spanish Castle Magic. A little bit of information that I found about that. I never knew if the title was just some psychedelic whimsy thing that he had come up with. It turns out that the Spanish Castle was the name of a nightclub near where he lived in Seattle, Washington. And when he was in high school, he used to play at this place called the Spanish Castle. And, you know, basically did a lot of jamming there with some of his friends. So this song basically was him basically remembering his high school days. And that's what inspired the title for Spanish Castle Magic.
Travel by my dragonfly. No, it's not in Spain, but all the same, you know, it's a good name, and the wind's just right. Hey! And battle ground, red and brown. But it's all in your mind. Don't fill your time on bad things. Just float your little mind.
Spanish Castle Magic. It's, you know, there were so many great songs on the first album, but the better bits of this record easily, you know, would work, you know, basically equate to that level of quality, of, especially in the songwriting. Jimmy is getting pretty sophisticated with what he's doing here. It's not, I mean, the guitar riff songs.
It's got his signature sound, though, throughout.
Absolutely.
And that psychedelic imagery that he was so... Like
catching a ride on a dragonfly.
Yeah.
The thing is, you're right. He owns that, though. You know, that's kind of his thing. His career was so short. I mean, he debuted in 1967, and he's done with the experience by 1969, and he was like dead by 1970, 71. I forget the exact date of his death. But if you're a fan of rock and roll, you more or less have to be a fan of Jimi Hendrix. One is defined. You know, rock and roll is more or less defined by what Jimmy does, you know. Still is in very many ways. He's probably the single most influential guitar player that ever played. You know, and he's very unconventional, playing it, you know, left-handed, upside down. Technique is really strange as well. It's not like everybody who wants to sound like Hendrix can achieve it, because there's very few that even come close. But there's an awful lot of people that are nevertheless influenced by him and play guitar. I mean, Neil Young is one of those guys. He doesn't play anything like Jimi Hendrix, but I know that he's a huge Jimi Hendrix fan. I remember that he used to wear like a Jimi Hendrix button on his guitar strap all the time.
A lot of people were, though. I mean, like, when Jimi Hendrix was on the scene, everybody was making an effort to go to the clubs and catch his act.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Stones, the Beatles.
Absolutely.
Everybody was...
Absolutely.
Out.
I mean, it's around this time, between the two albums, the Beatles had released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in July of this year, five or six months before this album came out. But the very next day, Jimmy appeared on stage in London, and he played the opening track from the album. He basically went home, heard it, learned it immediately, and opened a show with it. Then the Beatles, they were totally... knocked over.
Mesmerized.
How is that possible? And the Beatles probably figured that they had recorded a track that couldn't be played live, because they put so much time into the studio stuff that they said, well, that we're not going to play live anymore,
well,
so we can make this complex.
For not touring.
Right, exactly. So they have all these Rococo effects, and Jimmy didn't care. He just broke it down to the basic chord structure and let it rip. And it works fairly well. I'm not positive of this, but I don't remember that the Experience, meaning the other two band members, had ever done any singing on the first album. I'm not positive of that. This might be the first time that we actually get to hear their voices as we hear Mitchell and Noel Redding sing backup on this track called Wait Until Tomorrow.
Telling me. Think about ways
know, one thing that amazes me when I think about Jimi Hendrix and his reputation, I mean, obviously he's one of the most highly respected musicians in the history of rock and roll. And with such a small catalog that of music that was released in his lifetime, you would think that it would have been, all of it would have been incredibly popular. Like you'd know virtually every song. We're talking three albums. It's not a lot.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, if you think about a band like, say, the Pink Floyd, you probably would recognize three albums worth of music very easily by them because it's on the radio all the time. It's for some reason, it seems to me like classic radio just doesn't play a lot of Hendrix. And when they do, it's going to be Purple Haze, you know, maybe, or it's like basically the hits from the first album. But this album really just didn't get a lot of airplay. Now, there's some songs that I don't know if they really get any airplay at all. Like this next track is really short. It's only a minute 46 seconds, actually, which is even shorter than that intro track. But Hendrix gets an awful lot of stuff going. This is a pretty complicated song for a minute 46. It's called Ain't No Tellin'. Very cool. I love this album. I think it's like a really good, you know, parts of it are inconsistent. We'll hit some of those spots, I think, on side two. But side one, as we're, you know, basically talking about the vinyl, we still got two songs left to go. And it's one of those sides that just get better and better. It starts off with that, maybe with the silly track about spacemen and whatever. But now we're at the point where we've got, I think, the two most well-known songs on the album. The next track might be Hendrix's most loved song. Here on this album, it's so short. It's almost like a throwaway. It's less than 2.5 minutes long. In concert, this is one of the songs that he would play often, and it became one of the most beloved songs that he had ever written. What I didn't know was that the song was basically Jimi Hendrix sort of writing a love letter to the Monterey Pop Festival.
Oh, interesting.
The experience that he had at the Monterey Pop Festival. He basically imagined that the festival itself had a personality like a girl. And he wrote essentially a love song to the girl talking about the Monterey Pop Festival. And the name of the song is Little Wing. Thank you. That song, I don't know if it would qualify as the most covered song, but it's up there. There are an awful lot of versions of it. It's a song that I know Eric Clapton basically took to new heights when he did a version of it on the Layla album with Derek and the Dominoes. And, of course, Dwayne Allman as well on that record. That became something that they more or less made their own. In a way, it's very odd to have a Hendrix track that is actually outshone by a cover version by somebody else. But I don't know if that's really the case all in all, because, like I said, when Jimmy has, there's a lot of live versions of Jimmy doing that song that are pretty stupendous. And it's a beautiful melodic song, so it's a big hit. I think the song that is one of the most psychedelic, I mean, this entire album is psychedelic. Yeah. This next one might be the most psychedelic. I don't know what it was with numbers around this point. Like, remember Chicago with that had that dopey song 25 or 624?
Yes.
Like, you know,
I never knew what that meant.
Don't wrap your head. Yeah, don't worry your head about it. I'm sure they didn't either. And maybe that applies to this also, although the way Jimmy says it and sings it, it sure sounds pretty cool and like he means something. This is called If Six Was Nine.
Sing a song, bro.
If the sun refuses to shine, I don't mind.
Yeah.
If the mountains fell in the sea, let it be. It ain't me. A six turned out to be nine. Oh, I don't mind. Oh, I don't mind.
All right.
If all the hippies cut off all their hair, oh, I don't care. Oh, I don't care.
Finish yet, brother. Nice. Got more to say. White collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. They're hoping soon my kind will drop and die, but I'm gonna wave my free flag. Just don't fall on me. Go ahead on, Mr. Businessman. You can't dress like me. Yeah. die when it's time for me to die. So let me live my life the way I want to. Yeah. Sing on, brother. Play on.
So that's Jimmy playing the recorder. Obviously not an instrument that he is a master of, but it's something he was having an awful lot of fun with it, giving like sort of a jazz flavor to something that's incredibly psychedelic. Another interesting thing, that that percussion at the end, that clomping sound that's mm-hmm. going throughout the thing, that's Jimmy's manager, Chaz Chandler, and Graham Nash, who stopped by the studio that day. They got onto a drum riser, and they just stomped their feet. And they recorded it.
They were
it.
Literally clomping.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And that became like the heavy percussion to basically, I guess, to complement what drummer Mitch Mitchell was doing on that track. I think he gets like a bad rap. I think a lot of people basically, like, you know, they focus so much on Jimmy and they think that maybe the playing of the experience, Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding, it's as if they weren't really up to snuff with Jimmy. First of all, you know, who is when you play with Jimmy? There's not very many people that are going to be that good. Jimmy went on to play with Buddy Miles, and I think that Buddy Miles didn't even do half as good of a job as what Mitch Mitchell did. And I'm speaking as a drummer now myself, he was a drummer that I pretty much always took lightly because I figured, he's a little bit too loose for my taste. But they're a three-piece band. And Jimmy, the style of his playing demands looseness.
Yeah.
He's
a little bit kind of jammy.
And even then, I mean, you know, I've gotten to the point where I basically had to learn some of his songs. And playing his parts are not very necessarily easy, and they're more structured than you would think. So, you know, praise should be given to Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding for doing the job that they did backing them up. Critics tended to love the album for the most part anyway. I mean, Rolling Stone at the time of its release called the album a, quote, a refinement of white noise into psychedelia and the finest voodoo album that any rock group has produced to date. I don't know how many voodoo albums there were out there. So you're never really quite sure what these critics are talking about when they say these things.
Non sequiturs.
Right. Now, Q Magazine, which is a magazine that comes out of Great Britain, and they do an awful lot of, they kind of do like a magazine version of what our show is. A lot of like stuff where they focus on classic releases. And they said that the album basically, quote, dazzles as the experience create a genre probably short-lived because nobody else could play it. That's kind of what I mean. You know, those they really were, you know, that good as a unit, the three of them. I think it was a very special thing. It was too bad when Jimmy moved on because he never really quite got back to anything that was as cohesive as his work with the experience. But let's flip over the record and hit side two. We could play a couple in a row here, I think. We'll play You Got Me Floatin' into Castles Made of Sand.
Amazing thing, you turn me on naturally. Heads over heels for you. And when the day melts down into a sleepy red glow, that's when my desires start to show. Castles made of sand fall in the sea eventually. A little Indian brave who, before he was 10, played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. And he built a dream that when he grew up, he would be a fearless warrior Indian chief. Many moons passed, and more the dream grew stronger. Till tomorrow, he would sing his first war song and fight his first battle. Something went wrong. Surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melts into the sea. Was a frown, cause she was crippled for life, and she couldn't speak a sound, and she wished and prayed she could stop living, so she decided to die.
She drew a wheelchair to the edge of the shore. Into her leg she smiled, "You won't hurt me no more." But then a sight she never seen made her jump and say, "Look, a golden winged ship is passing my way." And it really didn't have to stop, it just kept on going. And so castles made of sand slips into the sea eventually.
Such a cool album. So much cool stuff on this. It's a great headphones album.
Yeah.
You sit in the studio, you know, you can hear the guitar panning all over the place. It's really awesome. Some also, you may have noticed that the there's a lot of backward guitar dubbed onto that track.
Oh, I was wondering what that was.
Now, he uses a backward guitar a number of times on this record. It's fairly sophisticated for its time. They basically, you know, they did the whole thing on a four-track. But they had 2 4-tracks. So that meant that they could basically record like stereo drums on 2 of the tracks, put the bass on another track, and maybe Jimmy on guitar on the fourth. They would mix that down onto a stereo mix for the 2 tracks, which gave them 2 extra. So Jimmy could add some overdubs and stuff. And it's essentially, this was becoming a little bit common. That's pretty much the way that the Beatles did Sgt. Pepper, too. So it's working kind of cool. Now, all the songs on the album were written by Jimmy, except for one. And it's interestingly, it was the very first song that the band decided to record. Apparently, it's written by Noel Redding, the group's bass player. And Jimmy heard it. Jimmy enjoyed playing the song because it had an open G chord. And he just really loved just basically bashing bashing it out without having to keep his hand on the neck. It just gave him a lot of freedom. So it ended up making the album, made the cut. It's probably the song that is the single most dated song on the record, to be quite honest. I mean, Noel Redding, basically it's a very hippie-delic song about hippies. It's called She's So Fine.
Thank you.
Jimmy even has Noel sings the track, the lead vocal. That's Jimmy doing the backup on that track.
The la 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 la.
Yeah, exactly. let's see. Let's play two more back to back before we get to the closing track. Back to Hendrix's compositions again, of course. The first track is called One Rainy Wish, and we'll segue that, just the way that it works on the album, into Little Miss Lover.
Thank you.
All right. 90.3 WHPC, what you're listening to. The show is American Hit Radio. I'm Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, taking care of the board, doing all the magic over there, getting things queued up properly. Makes me very nervous, but you're quite good at it, actually.
When you don't play evil tricks on me.
Like giving you the wrong track numbers and things like that, yeah. Well, part of my evil plan. If you're a fan of the show, I should also mention you can check out our website. All these shows end up getting posted, so if you want to hear some of the other albums from this series, check it out. Go to AmericanHitNetwork.com. We've also got a Facebook spot at American Hit Network or American Hit Radio. Check it out. We post a lot of our shows there as well. But if you just go to AmericanHitNetwork.com, you'll get the Wednesday show, the Friday show, and a whole, my God, it goes on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows. Pretty amazing that they're all stored there. So check it out. We'd love to know that there's some use to the historic nature of these shows. What we're doing today in this show is we're playing the entire Jimi Hendrix and the Experience album, which is called Axis, Bold as Love. And we are all the way up to the last track, so we can get to this right now. This is probably the most ambitious song on the album. You can really hear that Jimmy is really pushing his songwriting abilities to new levels with a track like this. He was something of a perfectionist. He actually insisted that the band record this 27 times before he was happy with a take for him to build up the song on that came out over it. Now, I don't know who Andy Allidord is, but he is a musicologist who said that this song contains, quote, simply one of the greatest electric guitar solos ever played. So there you go. It actually is the song that provided the title of the album. It's called Bold as Love. Everybody, thank you again for all your contributions last week, and please join us again when Heidi and I return here on Friday for the Friday version of American Radio. See you then. Bye-bye.
Anger, he smiles, towering in shiny metallic purple armor. Queen jealousy, envy waits behind him. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground. Blue are the life-giving waters taken for granted. They quietly understand. Once happy turquoise armies lay opposite ready, but wonder why the fight is on. But they're all flashes, trophies of war, and ribbons of euphoria. Orange is young, full of daring, but very unsteady for the first go round. My yellow in this case is not so mellow. In fact, I'm trying to say it's fighting like me. And all of these emotions of mine keep tolling me from giving my life to a rainbow like you. But I'm a answers. He knows everything.